This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I really am delighted, we've been laughing off the top, to be joined by Aurora Brown, one of Canada's funniest and most fearless comedy icons. A multi-Canadian Screen Award-winning comedian, writer, producer, actor, and co-creator of CBC's Baroness von Sketch Show. Before we meet her, let me tell you a little more about her. So Aurora Brown is proud to be one of the co-creators, writers, executive producers, directors, and stars, she is the star, of CBC's multiple CSA award-winning Baroness von Sketch Show. And in 2019, Aurora, like right in the middle of that 5 years of doing the Baroness von Sketch Show, she also was the co-host of CBC's The Great Canadian Baking Show, season 3. In addition, she's guest starred on Run the Burbs, Nurses, The Writer's Block, Man Seeking Woman, Orphan Black, The Gavin Crawford Show, Insecurity, and Corner Gas, amongst others. Aurora was also a co-creator, co-writer, executive producer, and co-star of the hit web series Newborn Mums. And that was even featured on Erica M. from the Yummy Mummy Club. Erica's been on this show 5 or 6 times before. And of course, Newborn Mums appeared both on CBC's and ABC's digital channels. Very cool. An alumni of the Second City Toronto main stage, Aurora has been nominated for many Canadian comedy awards, like multifarious, if I could use that word, for her work in Toronto's Red Hot Live Sketch and Improv Scene. She was a nominee for the 2000 Tim Sims Encouragement Fund Award. And in 2008, she won the CCA Award for Best Female Improviser. Aurora is also a longtime member of the award-winning Toronto company, Video Cabaret, and has a number of theater credits under her belt, including recently directing the Young People Theater's adaptation of Snow White and starring in their company production of The Darkest Dark, based on Chris Hadfield and Kate Fillion's best-selling children's book of the same name. Aurora, there's so much more, but congratulations on all of this and welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I have to tell you, the first time that I saw you live was when I was at the CBC taping for Small Achievable Goals. I believe it was season 2 with Jennifer Whalen and Meredith McNeil. And when the MC, the Master of Ceremonies, announced who was in the house that night at the CBC taping, they mentioned a few people, you know, a little scattered applause. But when they said your name, Aurora Brown, there was thunderous applause and a real stir when they said Aurora Brown's in the house. And it was like, there's a star in our midst and everyone knew it. And you are very well known and celebrated for your unforgettable characters, your razor sharp satire, and your uncanny ability to find hilarity. And you are hilarious in the everyday moments of modern life. Of course, you are best known for your acclaimed Baroness von Sketch Show. But before we unpack your illustrious career, I'd love to go back to the beginning.
Sure.
You were born in Thunder Bay.
Yes.
Youngest of 5 daughters.
Yes.
Birthday October 3rd, Libra.
September 3rd, Virgo.
September 3rd. Now that makes way more sense.
What a Virgo thing to say. It's actually September 3rd. I mean, we don't really believe in astrology, but if you're going to, you know.
You don't. And I'm a Pisces, your direct opposite, and I totally believe in it. So that's great. You grew up as the youngest of 5, as mentioned, daughters to progressive architect parents. And I love this, but it's so ironic, in a household with limited television access and this lack of TV. First of all, it makes you very smart when you're not growing up on TV, right? Anyway, I think this fostered your early creativity, inspiring you to play with books, imagine scenarios, and perform community theater, heavily influenced by listening to Monty Python recordings. Fabulous. Was it a happy childhood? And what was it like being the youngest of 5 girls? That must have been a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Okay. You just asked, there's so many things.
I know.
First of all, I'm the Gen X in my family. My older sisters are Generation Jones and a little bit of Boomer. And so even as a Gen Xer, just to have you paying attention and knowing details makes me feel like almost like tragically seen, but also slightly suspicious. It's like, why are you paying so much attention? But it's true. I would say that, well, first of all, yes, I would say a happy childhood. I mean, with all the wrinkles that come with having a large family and wanting to play catch up with my older sisters, because at the time, the 6-year gap between me and the next one feels insurmountable. They feel like grownups. So there's a lot of trying to catch up, which I think that you do find a lot of comedians who are youngest, because you're trying to get attention and love and approval any way you can. And, you know, you can be cute, but if you discover that you have a way of making people laugh, it's absolutely steered me into this. Not to mention that, of course, my sisters were buying Monty Python records. So I would sit and listen to them and just memorize long passages and the dialogue back and forth. It's funny what you say. It's true what you say about television. My parents were silent generation, grew up in World War II, and we had a black and white TV with no VCR. So we got CBC, CTV, the French channel, TV Ontario, and then a little bit of PBS sometimes. So there were huge cultural things that I missed out on. But on the other hand, we had a ton of books. So I was reading so much, reading things I probably shouldn't have been reading, you know, while my sisters were in high school, reading all that, you know, they always give you kind of like challenging, weird sci-fi dystopian things to read, reading those when I was 10. And I think you're quite right. My language, my reference level comes from all of those sources. And yet I have to admit that if I had had the access to YouTube that my son has, I would 100% be just going through things and watching stuff. I think I read books with the addiction that kids now look at videos with.
Really? That's so interesting. I love that. Your son thinks you're hilarious. That's a compliment, right? That's a compliment when a kid thinks you're funny, right?
It's true. It's true. It's like getting the world's most snootiest celebrity to kind of pay attention to you, you know. And I'm also really fortunate that I'm married to an improviser sketch comedian, Chris Siddiqui. So it's the three of us, and we have a very fun, you know, in families, you have your jokes and your little sayings and your little references. And we're lucky that we have a very laugh-oriented, very funny family, and we love laughing together. So I am very grateful for that.
That's so awesome. So were you a funny kid? Because I know that comedy came a little bit later, and I want to go back and unpack all that. But were you funny, like as a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old kid?
I do remember making people laugh. I remember the first bit that I did, I think the first acting that I can remember doing is imitating a Cascade dishwashing fluid commercial. No, it wasn't. Was it Fluid? Yeah, it was. Maybe some people will remember this, but they had this character called the Spot Man who would like jump all over your dishes and leave spots on them. And so I would imitate that. You know, I am the Spot Man. So I would do that. I do remember in school people saying, Aurora, you're so weird. And I think I certainly kind of leaned on grossing people out or saying something kind of out there and eventually honing that into actually being funny. I think when you're a kid, there's being provocative and bizarre takes the place of being funny, maybe. And then you kind of learn which ones do well.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
That's very, very funny. Do you remember the first role that you played in the Eleanor Drury Children's Theater as a young girl?
Oh my God. You really dug deep. It was A Christmas Carol. And I think I just played like a thief, you know, like I played like one of the, I was too little to do anything with lines. And I was one of the kids running around the pickpockets and the orphans. That's about all that I remember from it. It was a really fun time. I remember the offstage doing that. I remember like hanging out with the other kids and having a great time and going in groups and learning group choreography, but nothing too spectacular. There was no Hamlet level things happening at that point.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I love that. Also, what I found fascinating was that comedy was not your primary focus. So you wanted to be a serious actress. I found that so cool. And, you know, there's the whole thing about you never play comedy, right? You have to play straight.
Yes.
And so I think that's part of this. But what changed and led you to becoming one of the funniest women in Canada? Like, I know you went to York U for theater, for fine arts. I went as well to that same program, but I'm a lot older than you, much.
Oh.
Yes. But that's when you first, I think, became aware of comedy improv classes. And then after graduation, you stumbled upon those improv classes post-graduation and really found your knack for comedy. But I found that so interesting. So the first time you did improv, were you automatically hilarious? Like when you first did it? Because it takes a lot of guts and confidence to do improv. You've either got it or you ain't, right?
It takes a lot of bravery at first, especially if you've been just in the acting world, because not knowing the lines is... Yes. The literal nightmare,
yes.
You know, and I've had that nightmare where I'm, you know, I'm in a Shakespeare play or an opera and I don't know the aria or I don't know the monologue. And I had been focusing on that. It's funny because I had kind of forgotten that when I was applying to school and I was thinking, I want to be an actor. And I applied to York and went there and did all this stuff. And it's very serious. And I had kind of forgotten about this. I did a language camp in Quebec when I was 17. Wow. And at the end of it, we'd been there for 6 weeks and I was doing okay in speaking French because I'd been in French immersion as a child. And we did this theater sports thing because that's such a deal in Quebec, right? You know, and they had a tiny hockey rink. And we did improv and I did not know what I was doing. But because I was speaking French, it kind of took away my fear of the improv.
Wow.
And because I was improvising, it took away my thought about the French. So I just had to be in that space of just, and you know, I'd gotten okay at the language at that point, but I'd kind of forgotten about that. And I got the troisième étoile, you know, I was, you know, I was doing pretty well. But then after I learned so much at York and I loved the work and I went all the way through, but it was also very hard. And I remember feeling extraordinarily burnt out and I actually didn't do any acting. I did a children's theater and then I went traveling around the world for 6 months. When I came back, I just worked at a brewery and just like did whatever.
Detox. From York. Yeah. Yeah, got it.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
And then my friend was taking improv classes at Second City and she invited me to come and see her first Level D show. And so I went to see it and I was sitting there thinking, oh, this looks like fun. This doesn't look pretentious at all. This looks like awesome. Yeah. And one of her classmates was in fact, Carolyn Taylor. That's when I met Carolyn Taylor.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah.
That's
and,
very cool.
It was. And I remember thinking, oh, she's got it. Like she's got it. You know, you can always kind of see like, you know, some people are doing a great job, but some people just have like that thing, right?
Yes.
So based on enjoying that show and enjoying kind of chatting to everybody, I thought that just looks like fun. So I started taking classes and it was the poorest I had ever been. I was in a terrible relationship that was mildly abusive emotionally. And that class was the highlight of my week.
Wow.
It was where it was, you know, the 3 hours, like I lived for it. It felt right. It felt fun. I enjoyed the people that I was doing the class with. And you know, that feeling when you're in the groove and you're in that flow and just going, that's what it felt like every week. And it
yep.
was awesome. And totally. I couldn't even afford to take the classes for too long. But then I was, by that point, I'd joined a sketch troupe. And I thought, okay, let's do this. And so like all the skills that I'd learned, I was like, I can bring that. I'm not confident necessarily about the improv and the comedy, but I'll bring as like, as you say, just the commitment that I have learned
yes.
through Stanislavski and all those things. And
wow.
And then it just went from there. And being nominated for the Cream of Comedy Award, that was amazing. And doing sketches with my sketch troupe, Urban Myth, they were amazing. And then just doing various, you know, just kind of stepping my way into the comedy world, which seemed so amazing and
wow.
huge at that point. Little did I know how small the world actually is, but...
It's so interesting when you say flow, and we're going to talk about flow after, and Michael, who wrote the book Flow, because I know that's very important to you. But I think you realized at that young age, you know, when upon graduation at doing the sketch comedy, that you were in your bliss, right? It's that thing that you do. I always try to explain to people when you forget about time, when time passes, when mm-hmm. you want to spring out of bed in the morning to get to it, when you're just loving every minute, people compliment you because you're great at it, because it comes naturally and it makes your heart sing, right? And
absolutely. I have tried in my life to meditate and I'm not good at doing it, even though I love breathing. And I, when I teach, I'm using interbreathing. So I almost wish we'd done the breathing on camera that we were doing before.
Oh, it was funny. That was funny.
It's fun to do. It's the first thing that I, you know, that you have as an actor. The way you begin your interviews is how I would begin a class. It's
wow.
pretty much the same.
Awesome.
But what I feel, especially when I'm improvising, there is such a feeling of engagement, of being in the now. You know, I worry a lot. I recently was diagnosed with potentially, you know, ADHD, and I have my worries and thoughts all over the place. And, you know, my lateral mind is thinking of stuff and remembering things and putting things together. But when you're doing a good improv set, it puts my mind in gear. So I'm not, you know, like spinning my wheels.
Totally.
And a good improv set makes me feel how I've heard people describe feeling after meditating.
Yes.
Completely. And I'm so lucky that what I do for a living is the most enjoyable thing, especially because there's laughter involved, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And yeah. And so it's the best feeling. It's the worst feeling when it's a bad improv set. You know, you want to take an acid bath, but it's still the most, like, it's the most present you can be when you're in the moment. Here we are. It's going amazing. It's going bad, but still there you are.
You're in it.
Yeah.
You're in it. And that, and you forget about everything else. And that really is what meditation is all about, is it doesn't matter what's just happened and what's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in a great meditation, which is what you're doing when you're doing your great comedy, it's all gone. You're just in the complete horse blinders here and now moment. And that's, so I'm putting on that voice again. That's sounding like you're-
That was a specific, we can talk about that sketch too. That was such a specific bliss for me, being able to do that sketch, because I do love ASMR, and all my life, even before I heard the term ASMR, I always loved people with really relaxing voices and specific things. And children's TV was filled with people doing Craft Corner. And so when
and
I was
you're
able
a crafter
to,
too.
And so. I do like crafting things. So when I was able to write and film that sketch, it was a personal goal that I reached. I felt so good about it.
That is so awesome. I love that. So you're doing all of this and you're honing your sketch and improv skills, and you get to start working with that Second City main stage troupe. But when you get into that main stage Second City troupe, that must have been a trip for you. That, like, were you so aware of what that was and it meant, or were you just so in the moment that you didn't?
Oof. I mean, it is amazing. It's amazing because you get to do it every day. You get to every single night, and sometimes twice a night on Fridays and Saturdays. You have access to a real audience, you know, and it's a sizable audience too. It was about 400 people at the time when we were on 56 Blue Jays Way, and it was a very large theater. They'd moved from the Before I got there, they had moved from the intimate fire hall to this kind
Lombard.
Yes, they were on Lombard. And then I was in this very large thing. And it's having that communion with the audience every night is, I mean, it's a gift. Like, it's the joy of being able to do the job. It's, I mean, any audience is amazing, but this audience is, it's not a bunch of students who are also waiting to get up or other stand-ups. And it's not the friends of the people, it's folks who bought a ticket, and sometimes they are there to have a good time, and sometimes they're there to not have a good time and yell at you. You are in relation to the audience. And that is such a crucible. I mean, like, talk about getting in your 10,000 hours. You're on stage doing the scripted show. You're doing an improv set afterwards. And then for chunks of time, periodically, you're writing new material.
Wow.
So the improv becomes very intentional. And it's mixed in with all kinds of fear and ego worries and, you know, am I worthy? Am I talented? Can I keep up with my fellow performers who are all incredibly talented?
Yes.
And also competition in a good way too. You know, like, it was, you know, there are people who are so funny, and in particular, you know, I was on stage with Carolyn Taylor by that point. We were a set. And then also Jennifer Goodhue, who became a writer on, I mean, she's an incredible actress and comedian, and she was one of our best writers on Baroness. And she's such a physical performer, and she really pushed me, or I pushed myself, to try and be as good as she was so I could also get these great reviews, or, you know, do something that was worthy enough that would get the good laughs. And it can really test you, and it can really push you. And it pushes you into, of course, you know, your shadow place, and you find out all about yourself, which is also a gift that maybe doesn't feel so great at the time, right?
Yes.
But I remember about halfway through, just really honing in on every night, the joy of being in that place and in that moment. I would think about it and I would realize that, you know, there are people who work their whole lives at jobs they hate sometimes to be able to retire and satisfy the parents who are saying, you know, you have to get something that you can rely on, to retire, to maybe go on vacation, to go somewhere and have that good feeling for a bit of time. And I would get to have that every night. Now, also, I tell myself this when I'm like, why don't I own, you know, two houses or any house, you know, and, you know, the financial part of it is can be a bit worrying. But that point of creation, which is the best, most enjoyable, most laugh-filled place to be, I get to be in that spot doing that job. And, you know, anytime I've been in a long run of something, Second City is something, you mentioned Video Cab, and that's another different but long, incredible experience, being able to do Baroness, even though filming ends up being a tiny proportion of it, yes. But the creation is always happening.
Of course, the writing and the imagining and the all of it.
Yeah.
It's fabulous.
And the challenge is, of course, to how can I do this and get paid for it? Get paid that I can, you know, maybe have a home and raise a child and do all that stuff. But there's kind of nothing better than that feeling.
Yeah, totally. It's amazing. Were you a risk taker in the Second City? I always think about Colin Mochrie on this show and how he said, and I don't know if I'm quoting him exactly correctly, but he would really go for it like a gambler, like a 10-to-1 and go for the big thing. And sometimes it wouldn't work. But when it did work, it was so worth it. Were you a gambler and more of a safe improv comedy gal?
Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. When we come back, more with award-winning comedian Aurora Brown. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. I'm Judy Liebrack, and I'm here with Aurora Brown. And Aurora, just before the break, I was asking you,
were you a risk taker? Were you a gambler and more of a safe improv comedy gal?
I think I started off safe and then I started gambling. It's funny. It started happening. This is such a specific thing, but sometimes once you get good enough at something that you're not thinking your way through it all the time.
Right, right.
It's like there's a voice inside my head. Sometimes I would be in the middle of a scene and I would hear the line that I was meant to say kind of announcing itself into my mind. Like when it landed in my head is the time to say it. And sometimes it was something a little bit snarky or a little bit daring. I would say I'm definitely on the safer side. You know, I'm not as physical as some people. I say that even though since it's funny, I said to my husband sometime, I'm not really a character actress. I don't really do characters. And he said, what are you talking about? And then when I look back, it's like, I guess I do make things, but I think I'd like I said, to try and challenge myself to keep up with the people around me. And then if I have an idea of like, you know, this is the truth of how this thing must be, then I'll go for it. Yes. And but, you know, whether that's, we did scenes where we were like, you know, breastfeeding or, you know, sometimes stuff, it's like, if you're following the joke, you know, that's where it has to go. So it's not even me doing it. I'm just, you know, it kind of keeps me from thinking like, oh, I'm doing it. It's like the joke is doing it and I must follow the joke. So there I go.
Of course. Well, it's like the joke is taking on a life of its own, right? It's like the characters are writing themselves when you write that. Are you writing a book?
I'm kind of working on, well, I'm working on a few things. That implies that I'm like writing every day, which I absolutely don't. I do have a little book going on, but it's not about comedy and it's more about feelings. It's funny you ask, like being daring. I would say that since my parents passed away both in the last decade.
I'm sorry.
Well, thank you. You know, I think that obviously I'm sure there's lots of people out there who can relate to this, but once people in your life start going, you do start to realize we only have a certain amount of time here and what is important. And that experience starts kind of underpinning a lot of choices.
Yes.
That I will, you know, it's like, I think I will go for things that make these short minutes that I have worth it. You know, what's worth spending your time on?
Yeah.
So that's a very general indication of what I've been thinking and writing about.
Cool. Yeah. I can't wait to read it. You're going to come back on when that
absolutely
when it's done, and we can continue. We can continue. So now you've done Second City, mm-hmm. and then you were a principal performer and writer for 4 seasons on the Canadian Sketch Comedy Series, which aired on CTV, the Comedy Network, the Comedy Inc.
Yes.
That was from 2003 to 2007. That must have been a trip for you to be doing TV, doing this thing that you loved and making a living at it.
Yes, it was quite something. And it was an incredible amount of work. We'd be writing it. The filming of those things was just a marathon. Yeah. And I think to that experience, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of hard work. But I think being on a show, not being in charge of the comedy and not being in charge of the show was a real lesson, because all of us, when we were making Baroness, we had in our rearview mirror times where we'd been doing comedy, but not what felt exactly right for us. And that actually was a really foundational thing, because once you've done that, you realize, there's no time to waste. I tried that, but this is how I want to do it from now on. We all kind of are coming in with that same experience and that same drive.
Wow.
And all around the same age and having the same taste level of what we wanted to do. And it propelled us forward in our next piece of work. It was a nice thing to think that, you know, like, jobs aren't just like a strange collection of stuff that happens and you forget about it, but it does all end up making a contribution to who you are now, right?
Totally.
And so we got the incredible pleasure of being very in charge on Baroness, of hiring, of casting, on who's going to be our director of photography, what kind of directors did we want, you know, what kind of tone do we want, working with the costume and the makeup and the hair, which is so central, right?
Yes.
It was an incredibly satisfying amount of work to do. And I enjoy the whole process of making television. You know, I enjoy like getting picked up. I mean, who doesn't love getting picked up in the morning? you know, going into the craft truck, talking about what kind of look we're going to do today, doing a last minute rewrite on a sketch that we had already worked on.
Yes.
Sometimes we even went into directing as well. Like in the later seasons, we tried our hand at that. And that was another huge challenge, but thinking in 5 dimensions this time. And that was incredibly satisfying. And then editing as well, just such an incredibly satisfying way to spend your time.
Yes.
And very tiring and, you know, all that stuff and, you know, time away from your family. But it was just such an incredible experience to be given that, all those resources to work on.
Totally.
And we have this idea in our minds, like this ASMR sketch. It's like, I'd like to do something with ASMR. And then there's a whole team of people saying, yeah, let's do it. There's nothing better.
It's fabulous. It's almost like before was the dress rehearsal and then Baroness on sketch, you just got to unleash it all and just go for it.
That's a great way to put it. That's a really good way to put it.
So you land the Baroness Fun Sketch Show, which really was, for anyone who doesn't know this, go check it out on CBC Gem, one of the smartest, funniest, and most original comedy series ever produced in Canada. It just brilliantly skewered the absurdities of everyday life. You talked about it all, workplace politics, relationships, aging, that perimenopause. Oh my God, so funny. Parenting, social etiquette. And the show's incredible wit and intelligence and the unapologetically female perspective, which was huge, made it a cultural phenomenon, right? You were talking about things that had never been talked about in a funny way, which makes it digestible for people, even for guys, right?
Yeah. It's true. It's funny because, you know, it's very simple. It's like, just be truthful about your experience, right? And that's what brings it up. I think that we were really fortunate too. Sometimes people ask, how did you get your show picked up? And sometimes I still don't know, you know, like having a conversation with the people who are willing to put money behind that too. That's such a big deal, right? Because there have always been very funny women in Canada and lots of very funny sketch comedians who are female. And we just got given this really nice pocket of time and resources to do it. And it's true what you say about getting men to watch it. And I think I think they're not as used to watching people who aren't themselves. Anybody who isn't a white guy has to do a version of watching something, appreciating it, putting yourself in somebody else's shoes,
Right.
You know, has had to do that for a long time. And then you get somebody who does, you know, represent you. And that's a whole other experience. But I did get some comments from guys sometimes and I realized, oh, they didn't know that they could do that. They were amazed that they could enjoy something by women. But I did get this lovely message one time from a sketch and improv comedian who I'd worked with. And he sent me this message. He said, you know, I was watching the show. It was so good. And I'm out here in Nelson and I just watched this woman come out of a cafe, unlock her bike and ride away. And I thought, oh, I bet she's going to do something hilarious. And he said, I realized that I never would have thought that before, but it was because of watching your show that I thought her private life and her private foibles and desires and encounters can also be hilarious. And it was, I thought, such an intelligent way of putting that. And I was so grateful that he shared that. And, you know, anytime you open somebody's mind, that's always a great feeling.
Yes.
And, you know, just to open people to, there's other things that deserve funding and deserve paychecks and deserve.
You better believe it. You better believe it. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, in Europe, the thing that they'll save first before anything else is the opera house.
Mm-hmm.
Art is first.
It's true. It's true.
It's healing. It helps people. It's actually one of the smartest things. It's what can combat all the not good stuff because it makes you laugh. To me, singers, comedians, especially comedy geniuses, like, come on, that's what we need, right? And I love your cottage sketch in Baroness on Sketch, where what was so interesting about that was, you know, this is what happens at the cottage. This is what happens at the cottage and all the things. And then finally he goes too far, the guy, about what he wants to do in the hot tub. But that was so deftly handled and so hilarious because I think guys have to watch that and go, oh yeah, I can't go there. Right?
Carolyn Taylor, she wrote that and she was so good at noting how people let loose and, you know, paying that attention to like, what do people do when they're in these spaces? And Paul Bronstein, who played that husband, was so awesome. We had him back again and again because he's so good at riding that line of being like a little too much, but losing, you know, we were really blessed with incredible actors and incredible artists who came in to help us. What is that phrase? Art is the axe that cracks the frozen sea within us. I've heard Joni Mitchell make a quote that, and I can't remember who says it originally, but it's true.
Wow. So true. So true.
Yeah.
No, it was phenomenal. And the fact that it lasted for 5 seasons, that's like 100 seasons in Hollywood, like that in Canada, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's amazing. And it won huge critical acclaim and multiple Canadian Screen Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It was crazy. It was amazing.
When you got your first Canadian Screen Award and you're there all dressed up and all glammed up and they say your name, what was that like? Was that like, oh my God.
It really is. It's very surprising. I mean, you know, we put so much work in and we hoped and all this stuff, but when it actually starts happening and you're really glad that you've got good makeup on and a really nice dress and it is a really great feeling. It's just so nice for people to say, yeah, you know, in various ways, whether somebody's coming up to me in the supermarket, which absolutely happens, or something so concrete like that to say, we really thought this was a great job, good job. It's very nice. I have some of them are up behind me right now. And then there was one award, you know, we got the Rose d'Or award that the Muppets had gotten and, you know, Kids in the Hall had gotten. Oh. And that, you know, like those two together, it felt like, oh my God, like are my heroes. It is an incredible feeling. It does go a little bit of a way to quieting the insecure voices inside you, which of course are always there, especially for comedians, it feels like. Because, you know, you always think like, well, I've got to, what's my next laugh? You know, you're only good as long as you're making people laugh. And it is nice when those things happen. But I think just the continued desire for people to have me do what I'm, what I feel I'm meant to be doing is the best thing. I want to work till I drop. You know, like I just hope that people want to keep seeing me.
You know, I was going to ask you who your comedy heroes were, but how cool to imagine that somebody is saying that you're their comedy hero, right?
Yes.
Heroine, whatever. But, you know, who were the comedy heroes and heroines for you and who are the new ones or the ones that have always remained?
Oh, wow. Well, like, as we mentioned, Monty Python was one of my first influences. I got to meet Eric Idle once, and Jennifer Whalen's husband actually got a book signed by Michael Palin. And I had, you know, he wrote a book about Erebus, the boat. And I was like, oh my God. And he said, like, to the Baronesses. And I'm like, oh my God,
oh my God.
It's amazing.
God.
Yeah. And I got to meet Robin Duke. I got to meet so
Robin
many
Duke.
People. Linda Cash. Oh yeah. Yeah. I got to work with her.
She was
a
on the show. Robin Duke was on the show.
The women who'd been at Second City, in Linda Cash, she's a Canadian actor and improviser. And, you know, she was in Waiting for Guffman and she was at Second City. And I actually got to work with her when I was 12 during theater in Thunder Bay and then work with her later on. And that was so incredible. A certain point when Baroness was really getting going, Michael McKeon, who's, you know, Lenny and Squiggy, and he was David Tennant on Spinal Tap. And Spinal Tap was one of the first things I watched that with friends when I was 15, you know, in the 80s. Oh, and I was like, well, that's how good that's the acting can be. And he was complimenting the show and I tweeted at him and he was like, great job. And I was like, oh, it was crazy. It was crazy.
Wow. Yeah. It's so exciting. It's exciting stuff. Was there a moment from the series that was just, that stands out for you where you still get the goosies and you go, yeah, this is good. This is good stuff. I'm in it. A moment that you love. But if you want to watch something, like I watch Schitt's Creek episodes over and over, like mindlessly, like, I don't know what it is. I'm obsessed with that series. No, right. Let's not even talk about Catherine O'Hara because it just...
I know. I was just thinking like, I can't even say it.
I know.
SMTV, getting to meet her.
Wow. You got to meet her?
I did get to meet her a few times and she was another one, just like so good. Well, you know, watching her on SCTV, watching her and Andrea Martin, all of them on SCTV. Was another one where it's like, this is how good things can be. This is how high the standards are for acting, you know, for making a character, for going for it. Just so inspiring. Oh my God, now I forget the question.
I know. A moment in Baroness on Sketch where you just went, like, yeah, like I could watch that 100 times. Like that's real. That was good.
That's a really tough question because there are so many sketches, ones that I'm in, ones that I love watching. I think the answer would probably change every day, but the one that comes to mind first is when we were filming the sketch that opened the second season and we were all dressed as post-apocalyptic, like Mad Max women. And we were filming this on the Leslie Spit and we had the machine and we were having this discussion about not having men anymore and how some of us had, you know, hidden men away in a cave that we wanted to visit them. We missed them a little bit. But we had a Mad Max reference. Our cinematographer had seen it. He knew exactly what we were talking about. The director was right on board. We got to have a whole crew go out to the Leslie Spit, which is very difficult to get power to. And it was really hot and we had the incredible costumes and it looked amazing. So being able to have that level of artistry available to us.
Wow.
But that's the thing. There wasn't just one moment. It was that all the way through.
It's true. I see that. There's that through line all the way through. The land acknowledgement I thought was so brilliant because I do them and I've done them and I've been told you shouldn't do them unless you always do them. And I love how clever and intelligent that sketch was where the woman stands up and goes, okay, you did the land acknowledgement. So is the money going to the theater? Is the money going to fix, you know, to help people and to repair the debt? Like, that was so smart. And it wasn't
so smart.
It was just the right tone. It was just the right balance of
that
all
was
of
another,
it.
Yeah, that was another Carolyn Taylor special. I thought she just hit the nail on the head about the strange discomfort you can feel when you're hearing them. And it's a good thing to hear them. But then when it stops, just at mentioning names, it's like, well, then what? And so many people have talked about that sketch to both of us, I'm sure. I thought that it just nailed, because it's not punching down on anybody and it's punching at yourself. It's like, where are we willing to go to? I don't know how much that sketch has had to do with people changing them, but I have since then seen land acknowledgements that were more proactive.
Yes.
That, you know, kind of moved on from that space of we're just saying it and that's it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that the best comedy does is that it makes you laugh, but it makes you think about something or helped you to put your finger on something that you just kind of had a vague feeling around. I think the best stand-up does that.
Yes.
And so does the best sketch. And that's what I appreciate the most. And I was so glad that we did something that when Indigenous people I've talked to said, oh, when they started watching, I thought, oh God, here we go. And then they recognized the truth of what we were saying about ourselves, you know, yes. that it's not trying to prescribe for other people, but saying like, what are we doing here?
Right.
Which I think the best comedy does. Like that's kind of again
makes
and
you
again.
Think. Makes yeah. you think, elucidate, think. And, yeah. and yet it doesn't, you know, yeah, just really great stuff. And then right in the middle of the Baroness on Sketch Show, you co-hosted a season of CBC series, The Great Canadian Baking Show. Nice little side hustle. Mm-hmm. And didn't Dan Levy do that the year before you?
Yes, he had done it for the first two seasons. And then he moved on. So they said, would you guys like to come in for a season and do this? And I was like, sure.
Yeah.
And talk about finding your business. I remember during, well, and it was absolutely like the best part-time job. And we worked the schedule around so that we did it while writing was going on, but we would come in. It was a lot of juggling, that's for sure, to make that work. But man, I learned that carbs are love in physical form. I had also been dieting. Like I'd just been doing keto, you know, like, it was just ridiculous. And went like right from that into eating all the stuff. And it was before the pandemic. So we could eat all the stuff. I felt so sorry for the hosts during the pandemic because they couldn't touch it, right? We were eating things. There's things that I ate there that are, that I still remember so vividly. And that's what I think that was one of the beginning things of me realizing that like bliss starts with your body and are you making your body feel good? And if something feels good, if something tastes amazing,
yeah,
everything else falls away.
It's
there were so many good things. Oh my God. There's so many good things on that show that I got to eat.
Oh, it sounds divine. It sounds amazing. You filmed it at the Canadian Film Center, Norman Jewison's Canadian Film Center. Fabulous. And since then, and I want to tell this to listeners, you've done all kinds of recurring roles in Corner Gas, Orphan Black, Newborn Moms. What are your memories of working on Corner Gas?
We're going to hear all about that when we come back. Lots more to come with Aurora Brown after this short commercial break. We'll be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, and we're here with the incredibly hilarious Aurora Brown. And I just asked you before the break what your memories were of working on the show Corner Gas.
Oh, wow. Traveling all the way out there, I remember thinking, how am I going to, I'm going to feel so claustrophobic. There's no lake. I'm used to living next to a lake. No, it's so flat and open. Especially when we were on set, because it was out away from the city. And it was so much fun. I mean, it was, you know, the show had been so successful. And Brent, he was such a great, you know, he was executive producing and he was the star of the show. And he was such a generous person to be around. Like just the
great
set
guy.
Feels really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just getting to perform with all the actors, you know, I was so happy that I'd done a good job. It was really fun to do. It was great. You know, it was a really fun part in a really fun episode on a show that people loved. And it made me just happy to be alive, you know, especially at the time. I was like, yay, I'm working, you know, which is always so true for actors. And I had a wonderful time and just chatting in the makeup truck and chatting on set. You know, set can be a very wonderful, harmonious place to be.
Absolutely.
When things are going well.
When things are going well.
Yes.
We mentioned this off the top. You're also co-creator, exec producer, and co-star of the hit web series, Newborn Moms. Mm-hmm. What was your inspiration for that series? So great.
That was, at the time when that began, I had just been coaching a musical improv troupe. And one of the members of that was Nadine DeJury. And we got to be friends. And she came to me, she said, she had just been living in New York. Everybody and their dog was doing web series then. And she had a sister who had kids. And she said, I'd like to do something about children and being mothers. And I was like, okay. And I had, you know, trying to get back. My son was so little at the time and I was just trying to get back into the world. So I said, I'm going to say yes to this. And we started writing together. Certainly there were stories from my own son and my life as a mother, storylines that were lifted from her sister and her niece and nephew. And it was great to use all of that material, awful birth stories, because I had a horrendous birth experience. Being able to make, you know, comedy out of it was very therapeutic.
Yes.
So it was all of those experiences put together, and we, you know, did it on a shoestring and shot it in her apartment and my apartment. And
so fun.
And then scrabbling to get a production company on, and then, you know, going and trying to pitch it at Montreal just for laughs, and then ABC getting interested. And
yes.
It was great. It was a ton of work, a ton of self-starting, you know, realizing how much work it takes to become somebody in this industry. You have to be a person that people want to do favors for if you're trying to get people in. It's like, okay, I'm starring in it and I'm the craft person. So I'm feeding everybody today as well.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I loved working with the Dean, and she's a fantastic producer. And in fact, she now actually works on The Baking Show, and we're still great friends. And it was delightful. I did learn not to put babies on screen. I don't know if you know this, but when we went back and looked at the second season, we realized we had no actual live babies. We would just have like little feet sticking out, because babies are difficult to film with.
Of course, of course.
Yeah.
They're not predictable. Or no. They are predictable.
They're very, yeah.
They're going to cry. So, okay. If I ask you to give me a few sentences or a few adjectives to describe some of your fellow comedian friends, and I'm just going to talk about some of the people that have been on your show with you, Carolyn Taylor, few adjectives, words you would use to describe her.
Oh, super intelligent, unusual, perceptive, strange.
There's so many sketches I can talk about. I also loved you in, by the way, the beach sketch. You're in that sketch, right? The beach is,
oh my, I'm so ill. And
oh, yes. So good. Just take me up. Just get me a ginger ale or Sprite on your mouth. And it's the girl schlepping you up and schlepping you down.
Totally.
That's hilarious. Meredith McNeil.
Crazy, physical, committed, and so talented, and also very generous.
The hair. That hair sketch. Oh my God. The dry shampoo sketch. Everyone.
Yes.
Watch the dry shampoo. Oh my God. Insane. Jennifer Whalen.
Rogue. Sly. Mischievous. But also I'll say in charge, even though that's two words. She can play high status and low status. And I would follow her into space if she was the captain of a ship. That's more than one word, but that's how I would describe her.
Nice. Can you tell us how you met your partner, Chris, and what makes your relationship so awesome? Because, you know, in Hollywood years, you've been married for 100 years.
I know. We've been together for 18 years now. We have a 16-year-old son. We got on things pretty quickly. We met doing shows together at the Bad Dog Theater in the East End, and it just in the scene. And he's actually 8 years younger than me and was kind of just coming into the scene. So he hadn't hit Second City yet. And I was already out of Second City. We were just doing fun shows together. And we were friends. We did a show together that he was producing with a friend, and I was in it. And then we were friends. And then
your first date went on forever. It started off as this, and then it was a dinner, and then it was a concert, and then it was a this and a that, right?
Yes. And what we discovered was that we're both big nerds, and we both love Lord of the Rings, and we both have a similar taste in what we like. He's much more mischievous and out there and daring than I am, I would say. He's an incredibly funny, incredibly talented performer, and he makes me goofy and silly, and we love watching things and doing things together. You know, we're working on both a movie script and a television show right now that we're developing together.
Wow.
And we take the dog for walks together, and we watch things together. And I just love spending time with him. He's my favorite person.
That's the best. When you can say, who do you want to be with on a desert island, and it's your partner? Like that's pretty cool. So I know, as a bliss coach and meditation teacher, I know that gratitude is everything. It's everything. And I know that being grateful and present is a huge part of your life. Can you say more?
Mm-hmm. Years ago, when my parents were both still alive, My dad sometimes was very trying. He would come in and say stuff and I was like, oh God, you know. And I remember at the time thinking, okay, Aurora, imagine that it's 80 years or, you know, or 40 years in the future and my dad is long gone. And today is, I've been given a random day to see him again. And I would open my eyes and imagine, reframe the moment like that. And it really surprised me. It was able to transform the bits about him that were difficult or, you know, irritating into just, oh, there you are. Wow. You know, just like, here, I get to see you. And it worked. And I started doing that with a lot of things. I started doing that with a few different people. And then I started doing it for my own body. I read how, you know, Judy Garland realized, you know, she was always so down on herself. And when she looked at footage of herself from years before, she realized like, oh, that version of me was beautiful. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll think about that myself that way. Maybe someday I won't have the use of my legs, but here I am walking down the sidewalk. Here I am breathing freely. I'm not in, you know, as later on when you start seeing people in cancer treatments or that kind of stuff, you realize what a gift it is just to be able to use all of your body.
Totally.
And then I started doing it for the blue sky above. And as the world sometimes gets a bit darker, I do that little trick to find that beautiful feeling. You know, my favorite moment is just me and Chris on our bikes, just rolling down Shaw Street on a sunny summer evening. Here are all the trees. Look at all these peaceful people around us. Look at this kid selling lemonade. Look at my beautiful husband who's here and my son is here too. And it's my own version of just tricking myself. It's like, oh, I get to be here. I get to be doing this. And you can extend that to everything. Stephen Colbert is a deep Catholic, but I agree with so much of what he says. You know, all of it is a gift. So you have to be grateful for all of it. The experience of being angry, the experience of being lonely even, although those are harder, of course, those moments to be grateful for. But just to be grateful for all of it. So it started with that little mind shift around my dad time traveling. And then it's led to just trying to make every moment, just realizing like, oh, we're so lucky to be here.
You just made me cry. That's okay. That's okay.
And so, you know, talking to people and having a great conversation is one of the things, right? That makes you, it's one of the best ways to spend time.
Absolutely. You're a crafter. Is there a connection between crafting and comedy, between creating something from nothing?
There was a long time where I was knitting and it's not a direct connection, but when I remember there was a moment I was feeling stuck, I was feeling unemployed and I had to keep watching my son on the playground. So I was just knitting because I could do that without looking at it. And then I ended up knitting so much I made a blanket.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, I'm feeling so stuck, but I'm creating here. And this is something really, it's meditative to do it.
Nice.
I have something to look at the end of it. It's this beautiful colored blanket, that multicolored blanket that I made. And I realized that doing the crafting opened up that little sluice, that little block, and that creativity of any kind leads to other pieces of creativity. So anytime I'm doing, Jen Whalen and I took a course where we learned how to do some tiling or, you know, build a planter, or, you know, when I had to replace the toilet one time, that counts as crafting too. And it feels amazing.
Yes.
And so it's a way to get back into that same feeling without doing the comedy, but it's back in that same flow state.
I love that you just said that because you just gave me a great segue to use a comedy word. I love the book Flow by, here I'm going to try to say it, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, his book on flow and how the creative flow moment feels better than anything else. And I know we talked about this before, but just briefly, can you speak to this? And it's true. The creative flow moment, whether you're crafting, whether you're singing, where your eyes lit up like a Christmas tree when we talked about that, or talking about Baroness von Sketch and all of your beautiful work in comedy, that flow moment, it's just, it's divine, isn't it?
It really is. It's an exciting, calming, bolstering, filling feeling. It feels like the center. It's like being, it's like the feeling people have being at the center of a dance floor in an incredible club, you know, with all the lights. It's the same, it's that's mentally how it feels.
Yeah.
It's true. It's something that nobody can take away from you, like nothing. It's something that comes really from within. So it brushes those low feelings out of the way. It takes you from stillness into motion, and it can take you from hyperactivity into stillness. It's this peak point that's so hard to define because the moment you put a word on it, right, it's not even enough to describe it. But I think it's available to all of us from so many different kinds of experiences, whether it's writing, whether it's cooking an amazing meal, whether it's making 400 people laugh, whatever it is, it's the place you want to get to.
Absolutely. So you teach acting classes at the Comedy Bar. So I guess my first question is, can you teach comedy? Can you really teach it? Because not everybody is naturally fit. But can you teach it, I'm wondering, Aurora, to people? Or do they have to sort of come in there having that funny bone, being funny, being having told that they were funny, and then you take it from there?
That's a really good question, because there are absolutely some people who just have a talent for it. They look funny, the way they talk, they're, you know, also the way they look at life, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
But you can teach people, it's like teaching basketball. You know, you can teach the skills. I can teach you to breathe. I can teach you to listen. I can teach you to remember to use your environment. I can teach you to make the scene that you're working on about the here and now, about the relationship between the two people on stage. And if you do those things, more often than not, it will lead to laughs, because also you want to be honest in the moment. And if you have honesty and commitment and a connection to the person you're on stage with, funny isn't far behind.
Right.
And I mean, some people, you're right, some people just is like, we're going to hire them. This person's amazing. They make everybody laugh.
Right.
But you can teach the skills for sure.
When all else fails, what's a joke? Ba-dum, 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 right?
Yes.
There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show. And of course, we're going to ask it to you now. I think you might have answered it already, but I'll try. What is bliss for Aurora Brown?
Oh, I think bliss is being out in nature, in the sun, in the wind, maybe on a boat, but out in nature is really the most blissful place for me with people I love.
Love that. It's really been an honor to have you on this show today. It really has. I just loved it.
Well, I loved this conversation. You do great research and you're such a warm and present person. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. What a lovely compliment coming from you. Thank you so much. Aurora, what's the best way for people to contact you and connect with you on social media and watch all your programs? And
I think that Instagram is the best place. I am Alola Brown, A-L-O-L-A-B-R-O-W-N. But also if you just search for Aurora Brown, I'm there. And that's where I put links to the shows that I do and my thoughts on the world and flowers I like taking pictures of. And also that's often where I've been able to connect with people by messages. So that's, I think, the best place.
I love that. Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Aurora Brown who is living their bliss. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we'd love to hear from you. We also love to feature singer-songwriters and musicians on this show. If you are a singer, please reach out to us. Are there any guests or topics you'd like us to feature on FYB? Write to us. For those of you who don't know, I'm also the bliss coach. That means I help you gain clarity, get unstuck, and find your passion and purpose. I'm also an Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And all you have to do is search up Judy Liebrack. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I would love to thank our wonderful guest, Aurora Brown, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Lori Quinn, producer Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yannuziello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. And as well, thanks to Garrett Flores for the beautiful roses that adorn our set each week. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.